When you find reality is yanked violently from straight ahead to the hard insane right, you know you're off the beaten path. Defenestrate Media and The Left Show present The Sidetrack with Jason Williams.
Welcome to this week's episode of The Sidetrack. I'm angry, people. I'm mad. Trying so hard to find... let me preface this by... I normally sit down and record these episodes over the weekend due to some technological thwarting of my master plan that did not work out. So I'm just now recording this hours before it's going to drop, and I'm reading the news. I'm looking for something that's... I'm thinking to myself, okay, I've done a few episodes now on the topic of beating Trump that have just been focused entirely on my criticism of the Democrats, how poorly they're handling this, how often they seem to have no clue what to do with power once it's given to them by voters. And again and again, I'm finding myself reading the news here this week and going back to the same thing. I can't really get my mind to move past it, which some might say is an argument for Nancy Pelosi's own argument against, right now at least, beginning an impeachment inquiry. Pelosi has argued that it would muffle Democrats' message that was effective for them in the midterm and for all intents and purposes, from at least what the polling indicates right now, would be also effective in the upcoming presidential election year. I think personally that that's a misread by Pelosi, because she's going to have presidential candidates, primarily Elizabeth Warren as an example right now, who are going to be on that message. Warren has shown that you can make a big deal out of the president's behavior, call for impeachment, and still have a plan for everything. In fact, she has inadvertently become the I have a plan candidate, which I think positions Warren well for exactly the way Democrats will have to run in 2020, which is against an abysmally corrupt and unethical president, while at the same time proposing actual policy that will get voters excited. I think it's an oversight on the part of House Democrats to pretend to themselves that the election is going to play out in a different way based on their behavior. It's not. Trump is going to be Trump. And so I, in preparation for the episode this week, I told myself, okay, find something new. You've hit this drum so many times, and there are a few things out there. Joe Biden, Joe, what are you thinking, man? Just why couldn't you just leave it at quirky vice president of one of the coolest presidents in a century? Just leave it at that, man. No, you got to go run in yourself and sully the whole thing. Joe, man. Biggest comment from Joe that fits in with exactly what's frustrating me here is a couple of days ago, Biden at a rally says, you know, the Republicans, Trump is the problem. Trump is an aberration. And Trump, once he's gone, Republicans will come around. That I can't think of a more obtuse thing to believe right now than that. If you have not been watching the Republican Party, fine, you could come to that conclusion. But if you've been anywhere near politics right now and you aren't a Republican yourself, it would be impossible to convince a thinking person that if Trump goes away, Mitch McConnell and the Republican Party are just going to snap back into some saner realm. This is a party off the rails and losing. But still, because of some jiggery pokery, to quote the sex offender on the Supreme Court, it's probably going to be a long time before Republicans really pay the electoral price they deserve for the party they've let themselves become. That's a problem for Democrats. And so I get the political concerns, even though it's distasteful to have the political concerns be guiding something as whether or not this president should undergo an impeachment inquiry, which I think we have plenty of evidence to say this president should. I'm not saying impeachment. I'm saying that if they're going to stonewall, impeachment's all House Democrats have. So stop delaying and begin. Pelosi says no. Cynically, I can see maybe the political benefit of delaying impeachment. There's a risk there, though. The timing could be great. Having an impeachment inquiry begin in a way that actually was drug into 2020, rather than if it begins right now, it could possibly be wrapped up by this fall. And then you know how the president's going to campaign. It's going to be the same either way. He's going to be the victim targeted by Democrats and the deep state conspiracy, whether there's an impeachment inquiry or not, just because the Mueller investigation existed. So you're not going to influence that. So that's silly to think that that's going to change the dynamics of the election at all. An impeachment inquiry that ends in not deciding to send it to the Senate for an impeachment trial vote, that could be politically bad for Democrats. Doubtful, though, considering that Democrats in an impeachment inquiry will have the power to do more than what they're doing right now. And that's the key point on all this. And I swear I tried to move on to other things. I wanted to talk about the policy perspective of this, because you've got these presidential candidates right now that are talking about some amazing things, and that could really be a nice club to hit Trump with in 2020, because the man's a moron. And I think he got lucky in 2016. I think he thinks he got lucky in 2016. I think all he has going in is his crazy base and incumbency. I think this shouldn't be an uphill battle for Democrats. What I wonder about, though, is the harm that's going to come to some amazing presidential candidates. Joe Biden, unfortunately, Cory Booker, unfortunately, and yes, Bernie Sanders, unfortunately, not among them, in my opinion. Not because of their policy, because of the timing. I think, well, okay, with Joe Biden and Cory Booker, it's kind of their policy, too. It is not the time for a moderate. It is not the time for an old white dude. And let's just wrap our heads around that and stop pretending. Or let's go ahead and pretend until this time next year. I don't care. However it's done, as long as it's done. I'm excited about the candidates. I'm excited about their policy. I can't focus on that. But one of the reasons I can't focus on that, acknowledging that I am not the average voter, even for Democrats, acknowledging that I'm far more tuned in, plugged in, whatever phrase you want to use, to the political world than people with actual lives and real jobs. Acknowledging all of that, I do still think it's a reasonable concern that Democrats, with the most brazen and impressive policy proposals in a generation, heading into 2020, looking like the party that basically signed off on this president and his behavior by not taking the most drastic steps available to them while the White House stonewalled, ignored subpoenas, and instructed their own staff to not comply with House requests for information about a very important issue. It's an understatement to say that's going to be a bad look for Democrats. It's an understatement to say that that's going to create an unnecessary challenge for energizing their own base. Now, I think they're going to be able to. I think both bases, Trump's crazy base and the Democrats, okay, we're ready to give you a chance again base, are going to be fired up this go around. And I think Democrats really could see huge turnout among their base with any candidate, as long as it's a new face. That's key. So I get that there is a luxury Democrats might have right now in that Trump is awful and their base is going to be very excited. So they don't necessarily need to prove to the diehards within the party or in support of the party that they're willing to go above and beyond to hold Trump accountable. if turnout is the only consideration. There's, of course, the constitutional considerations, there's the ethical considerations, and there's the precedent set. By not doing a thing, when it comes to the Department of Justice, when it comes to the White House, when it comes to the power and the restrictions on the presidency, all of that matters. I'm not saying it's going to matter to voters in 2020. I'm saying it should matter. And so there's a lot of frustration on my part. And again, I acknowledge I am unique. This is a world I spend a lot of time in. And this is an area of study for me that has been interesting for the better part of two decades. I'm not the average voter. I still think my concerns are legitimate. And I think the fact that I can't seem to spend a lot of time on what I acknowledge is some amazing stuff coming out of the Elizabeth Warren campaign, because I'm frustrated watching Democrats subpoena and get ignored, demand and get ignored, ask for more information and get ignored. Yeah, they just had a big win in court. Is that how we're going to go about this? We're going to drag this out for 2, 3, maybe 4 years in court? That's our response to one of the most corrupt, on the surface, most corrupt White Houses we've seen in a really long time? I don't think it's a good look for Dems. And mostly, it is really discouraging. So for me, it's actually hard to focus on the policy right now. It's hard to put aside, again, no matter how much I told myself, don't, let's not do the same topic again this week, Jason. Let's find something new. And then the tech challenges come along. The equipment melts down. I'm 3 days delayed recording the podcast. It's all affected my mood, the weather. It's raining where I'm at. All this kind of contributes to me sitting here today just absolutely disgusted with politics. Reading about Monday night leadership meeting with House Dems, and Pelosi tells her caucus that the party's message, quote, isn't breaking through because everyone is talking about impeachment. Well, no shit. She says she's been concerned about the politics of a process that will almost certainly fail in the Senate. But you're not concerned about the politics of the message you're going to send by avoiding it? I don't understand. I almost at this point want to believe it is a cynical ploy to just delay the beginning of an impeachment inquiry. I really do. Because that would be better than believing that this person, who I've had the utmost respect for as Speaker every time she's had the opportunity, and who I think has been one of the most effective progressive voices in Congress in my lifetime, stand here and say that for reasons I don't understand, impeachment is more of a risk than being seen as a party that's handed some power to be a check on Trump. Because voters didn't elect Dems in 2018 because of their admittedly smart targeted tax cut policy. But there seem to be some House representatives that I believe want to believe that. There's a lot of psychology you could get into here about a party that honestly has no clue how to wield power in an aggressive way. And a party that has been so shunned in their own minds, although the reality doesn't back it up, by their own policy. Democrats apologize for their beliefs like Republicans never do. And I'm not at all advocating for Democrats to go down the same road Republicans have gone down. Republicans are going to pay a price for that. It's going to take longer than anyone would care for, but it will come. And unfortunately, that price is going to be paid without Democrats exacting it, which to me just seems like a missed opportunity. So you have these wins, the IRS actually saying that it's the IRS believes, according to federal laws, it understands it, that it is actually required to turn over Trump's tax returns if Congress asks. president going to shit his pants on this one. But the IRS saying, look, it is our understanding, and I'm sure some high-powered, high-profile, high-priced attorneys were involved. Their conclusion is that when Congress asks for the president's tax returns, they've got to provide them. That's great news. That's a win for Democrats. And what we find out from those tax returns could really move what needs to move along. But if Pelosi is going to shut down in advance talk of impeachment inquiries, what good is what they're going to find out going to be? Because lost in all this is how Pelosi herself campaigned. Steny Hoyer. Any of the representatives you've seen try to stamp out the spark anytime impeachment excitement starts to grow in their caucus. And excitement's maybe a bad word. It implies there's something positive about it all, and there isn't. this is, I mean, you have an attorney general appointed by the president, but supposedly heading up an independent agency, the Department of Justice. So you have an attorney general admittedly serving at the pleasure of the president, who has basically revealed his agenda. He was quoted just a couple of days ago saying that he stepped in to stick up for the president because he felt like, quote, the rules were being changed because it was Trump in the White House. Saying that he was actually doing what he was doing to defend the president because it was about the presidency, protecting the presidency for him more so than just Trump. This is not what an attorney general is there for. It's not what they're there to do. And Democrats, their response to this has just been, ah, that's awful. Well, yeah, we know. Do something. Part of 2018 was the policy. Without a doubt. Democratic ideas cannot be ignored as a factor. And that should be very encouraging to the party, to anyone who would like to see progress happen in this country. But the idea that accountability for this president, that Democrats campaigning on a platform, if you will, of providing a counter to Republicans and this president, if you want to pretend that wasn't a factor, go right ahead. And even let's say you don't, but let's say you have an argument that it wasn't a factor in 2018. If you want to pretend it's not going to be a factor, you're an idiot. The whole situation is so frustrating that it's hard to have confidence that things will go well, that things are going to be better. You know, everyone right now is, every Republican out there is so concerned about all the millennials embracing socialism, which they're not. They're actually just a little concerned about the capitalism run amok that the Republican Party and conservatives have embraced since Reagan with no pushback from Democrats. That's what I'm talking about here. We talk about tax policy on Republican terms. We talk about housing policy on Republican terms. We apologize if any member of the Democratic majority, when they have one, goes to the left. We apologize if a member of the House has a strong opinion that gets twisted by Republicans. We don't condemn the Republicans for doing it. We say things like, well, it could have been said more delicately. Well, no, the Republicans were simply full of shit, twisted someone's words, and tried to use it as political advantage in a situation. Why can't Democrats say that? When Republicans talk about this idea that they have successfully installed in the American mindset, including most elected Democratic representatives, that tax cuts always yield the greatest benefit for taxpayers. What horseshit? Economists do not believe that. Taxpayers do not believe that. The majority of them. And yet, this is how you'll see Democrats talk about it. They'll talk about these things in Republican terms. You'll see it in 2020. Even from the most bold of candidates, you'll see them slip. Because those are the rules. Republicans have won the frame on so many issues. Not because their ideas were popular. Not because their solutions worked. Not at all because this country is center-right leaning. But because, simply, they fought the harder fight more successfully when it came to how we talk about these things, to the framing. I mean, this is getting pretty deep in the weeds away from the Mueller investigation, whether the president did crimes and obstructed justice over those crimes. It's getting a long ways away from Elizabeth Warren and her I Have a Plan campaign. Kamala Harris somehow proving that a very aggressive prosecutor, which made me nervous at first, could be an amazingly progressive proponent of progressive policy. These are exciting things. I should be thrilled right now. I should be thrilled at the options Democratic primary voters are going to have. And I am, to a large extent. This is going to be one of the better election cycles, despite the orange moron. It's going to be one of the better election cycles in a really long time. And I'm excited about that. But I'm frustrated to watch Democrats fall into the same trap again. This long history of shooting themselves in the foot in advance, of ceding rhetorical and political ground to Republicans out of fear that some angry mob will come after them, while the angry mob comes anyway. Democrats didn't have the courage during the Tea Party craze to say, this is just racist bullshit about a black man in the White House. This isn't about taxes. None have gone up. This isn't about limiting the size and scope of government, something we can look back on and see those same Tea Partiers flying their hypocritic flags today. Democrats knew that at the time. They didn't dare say it because, well, the angry mobs, they're on your doorstep anyway. Republicans are going to act and say and do what Republicans act and say and do during elections, regardless of what Democrats do. And yet so many Democrats out on the cable news TVs recently defending against these trumped up, half-crocked, unjustified, paranoid accusations, politically convenient finger pointing from Republicans over socialism. It ain't happening. Millennials aren't embracing socialism. As I said, they are kind of scared at the unfettered capitalism and what it's done. And the fact that everything seems to work out great as long as you've got a high-priced attorney to help things work out great for you. Otherwise, you're screwed. That's what millennials are embracing, is a rational fear over a system that has gotten way out of whack. Democrats should be the champions of returning some sanity to the programs, the institutions, the systems that millennials have watched get exploited and pillaged by Republicans throughout their adult lives. But Democrats are instead going on TV and backpedaling, distancing themselves from members of their own caucus that have had the temerity to speak boldly. This is a psychological problem within the party. And I'd like to say that it's confined to the older members in the House and the Senate, but there are some signs that this is trickling down to the younger members as well. Not to be indelicate, but it's something similar to what you would see in a situation of abuse happening in the home. It's similar to what you'd see in a crisis that has gone on so long that the forest has been lost for the trees. And any way out seems like an okay way out. So Democrats are willing to again and again and again cede ground to the Republicans out of fear of the angry mob. Well, the angry mob shows up with the torches anyway. And every time they do, they gain a little bit more power. They might not be gaining the support of public opinion, but Republicans just rewrote the rules to circumvent that. The ideas of the American right might not be receiving an endorsement from the largest block of voters out there, so Republicans will just make it harder to vote. Their ideas might not be benefiting the shrinking middle class in any documented or quantifiable way, so Republicans will lie. And who's challenging this? I mean, occasionally you have a Democrat stand up and say something that we can all cheer and get excited about. But from a policy perspective, we couldn't even punish banks that nearly collapsed the world economies because there were no rules stopping them from doing it. And guess what? Because of Republicans, there are once again no rules from stopping them from doing it. No rules. We got a minor baby step in the direction of rules. And as soon as the Republicans got a legislative majority in 2016, it was one of the first things they undid without public support. So to say now that a justifiable cause for an impeachment inquiry staring Democrats right in the face is too risky. I'm not arguing that Democrats block the next Supreme Court nominee from a president elected duly by the people. That precedent should remain solely the act of the Republican Party. And one day it should be carefully explained by historians what an absolute disgusting act that was in respect to our institutions alone by Mitch McConnell. So I'm not advocating going down the same road. What I'm saying is Democrats, even with facts on their side, even with an observable reality on their side, with economists on their side, with public opinion on their side, still somehow convince themselves that their hands are tied and that the court of public opinion is at risk before even taking a step in that direction. Meanwhile, Republicans are over here having blown holes in walls, demolished buildings, set fire to the entire thing, lost their pants, can't find their wallet, their car keys, have no clue what even brought them there in the first place, and they are confidently full steam ahead. Like drunken morons who don't have to be up early in the morning. Democrats, on the other hand, well, Ocasio-Cortez said some kind of aggressive things in an interview, and they ran from her. Their defense of now two Muslim Democrats in the House of Representatives, elected by a majority of the people in their districts, were under attack, bullshit attacks from Republicans, calling them anti-Semites for criticizing Israel's policy, which if there is a policy out there more deserving of Israel's policy towards Palestine, I cannot think of one. And reasonably criticizing the influence of AIPAC, the lobbying group that deserves some scrutiny right now. Republicans called it anti-Semitism and Democrats cowered. This is a systemic problem within the party. And what is most bizarre about this is that 10 years out from Ronald Reagan, you could excuse it. 15 years, if you want to be absolutely generous, you could even say 20 years from Ronald Reagan. You can understand the jitteriness of Democrats. They got owned by Reaganism and the movement behind him. And I heard him for a long time. Internally and externally. Outside of winning election cycles, the Democratic Party didn't have an identity until Bush came along and started wars. That is what brought what identity the Democratic Party has now back to life. And here we are faced with a somewhat similar challenge. I mean, obviously, Donald Trump, as awful as he is, isn't as horrible as going to war for a country in another country without cause. And all of the death and damage that came along with that. Hundreds of thousands of dead Iraqis and displaced Iraqis on top of that. Donald Trump isn't even that bad. So I won't make that comparison, but this is the second time in this new century the Democrats have been faced with an actual crisis, and it looks to be the second time they haven't been able to stand up against the Republican Party in that crisis. Republicans decided what was going to happen, and Democrats found cause, justification, and excuse to fall in line. The few times Democrats have actually tried to drive the direction or the narrative themselves and succeeded, it was only because Republicans, for one reason or another at that specific time, weren't prepared to fight back. This is an imbalance that existed between the two parties for decades. And I think Nancy Pelosi is emblematic of it, at least in respect to impeachment. Again, this is one of the most, I think, laudable progressive champions in the Democratic Party for a long time. She deserves credit. She deserves praise. She deserves to be Speaker of the House. Doesn't mean she's perfect. And I think this is one of her imperfections. I think Nancy Pelosi is a Democrat that has for far too long bought into whatever it is in their heads that makes them unable to wield power in the face of crisis. Democrats can handle power and the legislative process with ease. What they can't handle is power in the face of a crisis with an opposition party willing to go batshit insane in self-defense. Democrats are so afraid that Republicans will win by being willing to get crazier every single time, the Democrats, in a lot of ways, have stopped trying. And I think if there is not an excuse to do that right now, in the face of what we already know and what it says about what we might need to know but don't yet about this president and his administration, if that is not cause enough for Democrats to drop this cowering approach to power when voters give it to them, even in the smallest way, nothing will be. And we effectively have one-party rule. I'm not trying to be dramatic. But if Democrats are just going to let Republicans call the shots because Republicans are willing to get louder, crazier, and angrier than Democrats generally are, there's no reason for Democrats to fight on any front. I don't think we're there yet. I think there's some unexplored territory here. And again, if the approach, cynical as it might be, is just to delay an impeachment inquiry, to wait and find out more, I can even understand the political benefit alone of waiting at least until you've worked out a time to hear from Mueller himself. But I've, as I've said now, four episodes in, and I'm sorry about this, I promise I'll find something else next week. This just seems the most pressing thing to me. If you hear from Mueller, and if things continue to look as bad as they do, with each tiny little bit more we find out, post shutting down of the Mueller investigation and the report coming out, Democrats have no choice but to say definitively yes or no once they hear from Mueller, or if they hear they're not going to hear from Mueller, they have no choice but to say yes or no on impeachment inquiry. And I'm kind of concerned that this decision is actually going to be, like so many have been, left up to Republicans. Almost as if Democratic majorities never exist. It's frustrating. And I can't shut up about it. I'm Jason Williams. Thanks for listening. See you next week.